We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. I don't have any opening because the Hornets aren't playing any sort of games. We have won the first pick of the draft, the 10th pick in the draft, and we have a whole bunch of other things to talk about. However, we're getting a lot of news out of the workouts, what people are doing. So, Michael, what do you want to talk about first?
See, I already disagree with you. I think the Hornets are playing plenty of games. Have you heard them say they're taking Anthony Davis yet?
No, I have. In fact, they're being very careful not to.
Yeah, they're playing games with us. It's a little bit frustrating, but it's, you know, it's funny.
Well, clearly they're going to trade down and take Andre Drummond third.
Yeah, that would I think that would send us into a state of panic. But no, that's that's one game they're playing. But now, kind of as we predicted, it's almost like Anthony Davis is on this team. You know, fans have taken that for granted, and now it really seems to be all about that number 10 pick. And the Hornets had a series of workouts today with guys who are in contention. It's been about, gosh, it seems like a lifetime ago, but it's only been, what, 4 days since our last podcast when we landed Anthony Davis. Over those 4 days, if you've had any time to pull yourself away from the honey-do list, have you gotten any clearer thoughts or locked in on any guys with that number 10 pick, or are you still open to any and all argument?
I'm pretty much still open to anybody at the number 10 pick. So the list of guys who came in and played today, Austin Rivers, Jeremy Lamb, Terrence Ross. So who's Terrell Stoglin? I know you've followed more college ball. Who is this guy? I'm going to do my Monty thing, who had never heard of Arnett Moultrie. So who's Terrell Stoglin?
Have you ever tried to play a game of two-on-one basketball?
Am I the two or the one?
Exactly.
Yes, but yes,
either
I have.
Either way, it just sucks and it's unenjoyable. He right. Needed a fourth guy. This guy got to be seen by a couple of NBA talent evaluators. You know, he was happy to show up. Basically, they couldn't get a fourth guy, and Monty talked about it a lot today about how, you know, several guys that they were interested in canceled, you know, their workout appointments basically because, you know, their agents don't believe that the Hornets will have any interest now that they're taking Anthony Davis. I'm assuming he's talking about guys like Bradley Beal, and you know, I'm 99% sure that when today was set up, Bradley Beal was that fourth guard pulled out because he's not getting taken first and he's not last until 10. So this guy got the opportunity of a lifetime. Congrats to him.
Yeah. They've done that before, actually, when they were bringing in prospects to play, you know, when Collison and them were, they would bring in a bunch of guys who were coming late second round or bubble just to see what they could do. Maybe we still see Stoglin get a summer camp invite or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think the logic is that, you know, they probably switch the teams around, and if one of those prospects struggled against that guy, he's probably not worth taking with the top six. So you just make sure that all three of those guys you're considering could dominate a guy who will probably never play in the league.
So I'm thinking, I'm still going with Sol. I'm back to Solinger again. So, you know, and I actually said the reverse last podcast. I'm flip-flopping. I said, no, not Solinger. Then you convinced me, yeah, Solinger. And I've been going back and looking at it. I think Solinger would be great. If we can get rid of one player, Okafor, I think we'll be good with having Solinger on the team too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not flip-flopping, and I've got to admit that I've tried to be as open as possible to, you know, the whole thing, because frankly, I don't want to be disappointed if one of my quote unquote my guys aren't taken, but it's almost impossible for me to look at any direction other than Austin Rivers or Kendall Marshall at this point. But, you know, we'll talk about that and those guys and how they would fit a little more. I kind of want to break down, you know, Monty made a joke today that, you know, they asked him what's different about this year than past years. And he just looked at the guys in the press and said, you guys, you know, you haven't been here before. No offense. But now that we have the first pick, you know, I got microphones in my face everywhere I go. And you know, I think I feel like we've seen and heard more from Monty and Dell, you know, via national media, via these press conferences that they're holding, than we have. And, you know, ever since the infamous Dell Demps rocking chair first day on the job talking to Chris Paul. And, right. I mean, we got plenty of stuff to go through, so I just kind of want to take what they said. Both of these guys are good at saying things without saying them, and maybe try to break down a little bit of the subcontext. So I thought Monty's press conference was great, and one of the things that really stood out that he brought up multiple times was length, and he specifically said that he just remembers that Lakers series where, you know, the Hornets tried to penetrate that defense, and there were just arms and legs and bodies everywhere, and it made it a nightmare for the Hornets. He also said unequivocally that do not be surprised if the Hornets use both their picks on big men. With those two statements, could you see the 10th pick also being a guy that's 6'9" or taller? And if so, with Monty so fixated on length, who are some guys that the Hornets could take there at 10, and how would they fit?
Well, I mean, you have to look at Zeller and good old buddy John Henson, because I mean, if you're just looking for size, that's the way to go. A Solinger kind of falls out in that case. If they're looking for length and speed, and I mean, Solinger, that's not his strength. And of course, so I was actually wondering this, the guy who I think would be your worst case scenario at 10, Perry Jones, could very well be there as well. So we have that, you know, for those of you who haven't seen it, we have the 10th pick tourney that we're going on. We have a bunch of prospects, you know, eligible for that 10th pick. We think will be available there. We're going to make the arguments about who should advance and when. So on that list, which of those guys scares you the most? And I can't let you say, you know, trade up or trade for vet, because clearly those aren't guys. But which of those guys scares you the most?
I mean, that's realistic, because, you know, Myers Leonard is not going to be picked at 10, and probably Moultrie isn't, whatever. But that's realistic. I don't know why, and I think if we put a poll up of all the guys, this guy would win, but he's the one I want least, and that's Damian Lillard. I just don't get it. I mean, I get it because I know that Hornets fans are starved for scores, and this guy was second in the nation in scoring at Weber State. But I absolutely don't understand the fascination with this guy. And to me, you're just adding another middle point guard to a team that already has two in the – I feel like at that point it would almost be a wasted pick and a pick that, you know, would never develop into a commodity that we could trade anything for, where at least Perry Jones, if he shows some flashes, you know, Aminu showed a few flashes in his rookie year, and he was a key part of a trade that got a top five guy in return. So to me, at least Perry Jones could be a commodity, you know, in the future because he has size and length and quote unquote potential. I just cannot fathom and grasp this fascination with Damian Lillard.
And I mean, I can see the fascination. I look at Lillard, and of course, you know, I'm the stats guy, and I know you have to take him with a grain of salt because of the school he's in. But when you look at his stats, and that's all you think about is his stats, Lillard turns into something pretty amazing. But then, you know, if you're just thinking about stats, our good buddy Adam Morrison was pretty amazing as well. And he's looking awesome dunking over in Europe right at the moment. So
Jimmer Fredette playing against another Mountain West. Yeah. Okay, you want to look at stats? Go and look at Damon Lillard's freshman year at Weber State, where he got 30, 32 minutes. It's not like he was one of those freshmen who came in didn't get minutes. And then compare them to Austin Rivers' freshman stats at Duke. You see a lot of the same numbers as far as your advanced numbers, your whatever, but Austin Rivers gets to the line more. He scores more points per game. He's a little more efficient. So my thing is, okay, are the Hornets – maybe you could convince me that Lillard next year will be better than Rivers, but I didn't think we were trying to go for a title next year. And right. I just can't be sold on the fact that if Rivers, while playing at Duke, put up better numbers than Lillard at Weber State in their freshman years – that if Rivers were to continue to develop and be at Duke until his senior year, that his numbers wouldn't have been as good. And then beyond that, if Rivers would have been at Weber State and playing at Weber State as a senior playing against younger guy, I mean, they would have been through that. So anybody who tries to sell me on numbers with Lillard, I just don't understand, because he was a senior playing in a horrible conference. And when those things, you know, weren't the case, you know, Rivers was a better player as a freshman than Lillard as a freshman. So I just don't get it. And I want to get it because I have a scary feeling that he has a good chance to be in the pick, and I don't want to be miserable when that pick comes up.
So I think I've gone on record. I like Henson. I like Sullinger. And you know what? I was actually trying to lead you into this so I could ambush you. I'm actually Perry Jones is growing on me as a possibility.
And to play, so how did he fit? And I guess my bigger question is Aminu essentially gone if you draft Perry Jones?
Yeah, I think so. I think Aminu at the moment is Perry Jones light. I don't know. I see a lot of Lamar Odom and Jones, and I mean, that's the question: is that a good or a bad thing? Because Lamar Odom had his moments, and he also was dreadful at times. So, but if you can get somebody with all the talent, you can get amazing seasons out of those guys sometimes. And I don't think you're going to hit a home run with the 10th pick. So, if you can maybe find a guy who can give you a few amazing seasons, you go with that.
Yeah, I mean, I get Odom on some levels, the rebounding, the length. I remember Odom coming out of school. A lot of the highlights in his highlight package was him in isolation at Rhode Island, taking people off the dribble, creating for other players. I've never seen Perry Jones do that once. Okay. That I don't see, but I see other parts. But it definitely fits the length profile that Monty's talking about. But again, if you get Jones, that means you're probably going to just give Aminu away for nothing. So it becomes, would I rather have, you know, two guys or one? Would I rather have Austin Rivers and Aminu or just Perry Jones? Because to me, if I'm taking Perry Jones, I'm using that pick and I'm throwing away a guy on the roster.
Right. So there's one more thing. I want to get your opinion on this. And I know you keep saying you don't believe positions matter. And you keep saying you think that when the Hornets, when crunch time comes down to crunch time, that it will be Anthony Davis on the court as the biggest Hornet playing out there. If we have our choices, let's say next year our choices is we have Anthony Davis, we have Ione on the roster, we have Jason Smith on the roster. Is there anybody you add to those three guys to fill in a weakness that you can find in this draft? And we're looking at the league as a whole. Because, I mean, I know you can go and look at, like, some teams, and those three guys you could probably match up pretty well with. But if you're just worrying that, okay, and when I come up against one of these four teams or these five teams, maybe I need someone a little different from those three. Because as far as I'm concerned, strength, size-wise, maybe those three guys aren't they're not the most powerful around. So do you worry about that or not?
No, only because, I mean, only because one, centers who could score and have the, I don't know, kind of the motor to dominate game in and game out are so rare. And even the ones that do exist can be taken away. I mean, to me, you know, for all the hype that is Dwight Howard, Orlando really only made one significant run, and that was in a year when their outside shooters just caught absolute fire.
Or were on drugs.
Yeah, it wasn't Rashard Lewis. it wasn't Dwight Howard. I mean, if you really want to take a big man in the post out of the game in this league, you could just do it. So to me, if I'm going to have a defense, I wouldn't mind having that one. I guess when I hear your question, I think more about low post scoring. You know, a little bit what I don't know whether to be excited about or a little afraid of is, you know, there's a lot of news about Anthony Davis's working out in Chicago, but when they talk about what he's working out on, what he's working on, it's primarily his face-up game and his jump shot. There's not much talk of him working on his post game. It looks like he's going to model himself, you know, more at the later stage Kevin Garnett that we've seen, where he thinks he's, you know, a jump shooter, a guy that could take, you know, if a David West is covering him because he has good ball handling and quickness, he could take him off the dribble and get to the basket. But it doesn't sound like, you know, he's going to go to Hakeem Olajuwon's big man skills camp. So to me, I would love to add to those three guys a guy that I know either, you know, for 25 minutes a game or at the end of games that I could go to in the post and get some offense. So that comes back and brings me back to Sullinger as a possibility.
Zeller, would he work for you too?
And see, that was the same thing that we asked Zeller today, you know, how he sees himself complimenting Anthony Davis. And he said that, you know, he believes he could step out and hit the 15, 17 footer, you know, to pull defenses away a little bit. So it sounds like he's modeling himself after that kind of game as well. He's not a guy who, from what I saw, he had one low post move, the hook over the left shoulder. So, no, I don't think he's ever going to be an above average low post player. I really think that the only guy in this draft, you know, and it's a skill that we see less and less of in the NBA, the only guy in this draft that's guaranteed to be an above average low post player is Jared Sullinger.
So you want Rivers or Marshall, but if we ended a Sullinger, would you be okay with that?
Yeah, he'd be my third.
Okay.
Yeah, I really, like I said, I think those two guys, I don't care who plays the four, who plays the five, on defense there's not many teams that they're going to be overmatched by.
So I think we should draft Anthony Davis, Henson, trade for the rights for Jones, keep Farouk Aminu, and then I don't care what point guard it is. So we have four extremely long, athletic guys. We'll never score a point, but nobody else will either.
That's the kind of game you play. I mean, last night in the Heat Celtics game, that was a 4-2 overtime game.
Right. I make jokes about that, but actually, for all the impressive athleticism that would be on the floor, I would hate to watch a team with that kind of lineup. Yeah. I really would.
No, but I mean, Monty did come back to length, so it's a possibility. I actually sent Joe in there with my little spy as a little spy with a question that I've been dying to ask either Monty or Dell, and got an interesting answer out of Dell. He, kind of set my thinking straight a little bit in this way. I've had this theory that the league is just going outside in, and Joe asked him that question with the four teams that are remaining. You know, we have mostly perimeter players. We only have one low post guy. Is that the way the league's heading? And is that how the Hornets are going to build? And he basically said, no, that at the end of the day, he would always want to start inside out. That's the most efficient way. He said the reason that the teams with that formula are not performing are because there just simply aren't as many knockdown shooters as there used to be in the league. So teams are packing it in. So basically he's saying it's not the lack of low post guys or that's not the way to go. He's saying that there's simply not enough shooters to keep teams honest anymore. Would you kind of agree with that assessment? And if so, do you still think that the Hornets could build this roster and build the offense specifically inside out?
Well, I think that's a symptom of something you keep bringing up, which is there are no shooting guards worth much of anything anymore. I mean, the guys who are noted shooters, name one noted shooter who isn't also described as a liability on defense. I mean, it doesn't happen anymore. It's it used to be back before we got old. I mean, look, there were players like Ray Allen, Sam Cassell. I mean, there were shooting guards, Rip Hamilton. I mean, there were shooting guards who could knock down that three at, around 39-40%, but that wasn't their game. That was just a weapon in their game. And right now, I mean, the only ones you can think of that have a more complete game, and even that's a stretch, I guess you could say Eric Gordon, though he hasn't proven that he's an incredible three-point shooter. You could go Kevin Martin, though I guess defensively he's weak, but he's got a lot of other parts to his game. I mean, even now, I'm making excuses for everybody.
Right.
The consensus best shooting guards in the game are Dwayne Wade and Kobe Bryant, and if you think that they would do well in a three-point shooting contest, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Brandon Roy and Manu Ginobili were the best shooting guards who had a really nice three-point stroke, but one is ancient and one is retired.
Actually, hold that thought. Brandon Roy is talking about coming back next year.
I would love it. You know what happens as soon as that... You know what happens, but if that happens, right?
Do I know what happens if that happens? No, what happens if that happens?
Portland gets hammered with a whole bunch of cap ramifications.
No, because they amnestied him.
Yeah, but they end up having to pay all the the insurance won't pick it up anymore. I guess it's not cap ramifications.
Yeah, pay it. Yeah, just
you're right.
Another tab for Paul Allen to swallow. But yeah, and it was funny. One last thing from Monty's press conference. Well, two things. One is just something that'll scare the bejesus out of you, but I have to bring it up because it's something that I advocated for in the last podcast, and you basically said no in your Ryan Schwan Hogswoggle whatever voice. I don't even know what Hogswoggle is, but it just sounds like something you'd be interested in.
Okay.
I said to you, that in free agency, my goal would be to bring in more veterans to show the guys the ropes. You said that guys will learn how to carry their bags and whatever on their own, kind of made fun of me. But Monty in his press conference specifically said that Jack Smith and I think he said Bellinelli took on too much of a leadership role last year, and that this year, they're going to have to get more vets in to kind of remedy that, and that just screams to me one thing. Willie Green is coming back.
I know, and he actually said something about Willie Green in some interview I heard.
Yeah.
He mentioned Green, that he missed Green, and it was just a recent one, too.
Yep.
Give it up, Monty.
He's coming back, and he's going to teach Anthony Davis how to brush his teeth.
God, I mean, if we end up having the argument, should Willie Green or Eric Gordon be starting? and Eric Gordon's losing? Ah, I'm beat my head on a wall.
But my favorite quote, and it's my favorite because you could go a million different ways of who he's talking about here, but he basically got into a little bit of a tangent, and he said, you know, there's guys in this league making $15 million complaining about how they want more help, how they need more players. I got news for you. When you're making $15 million, you are the help. Who is he talking about? I mean, I've talked myself into like four or five specific different players on this one. When you first hear that, who do you feel like he's talking about?
Well, I mean, the immediate response is Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Because I've also thinking, of course, LeBron. But Chris Paul pops into mind because, of course, his situation was he had a $15 million player who went to them and said, I don't have enough help here. I'm leaving.
Yeah. And I will say that it came just a couple questions after the media was asking about whether they'll resign Eric Gordon.
Do you think it was aimed at Eric?
I don't. I really think that you could convince yourself. That's what made it so mm-hmm. fascinating to me, is I think you could convince yourself. You could talk yourself into it being Danny Granger.
Right.
You could talk yourself into being a number of guys, but to me, I fell more in love with him in this interview. He always puts stuff in perspective. You know, he's saying, you know, some of these problems that they have with re-signing Gordon and who to pick at 10. He was like, the guys, these are basketball problems. They're good problems to have. You go down to the ninth ward and those are real life problems. We're talking about basketball problems here. I love the guy. Like he's become my new favorite Hornet, as much as I love Anthony Davis, but I don't know.
So when you heard that the Clippers might make a run at Monty, did your heart skip a beat?
I was considering what package I would ask for back, and it would be centered around Blake Griffin and a couple future pieces. I mean, I just really believe that there's a chance to have kind of a Jerry Sloan type of coach here I really do, especially now that he's got Anthony Davis and he's going to have the time. It's just very hard for me to see if Monty Williams is bringing the best out of a horrible roster, that if given enough time, you know, he doesn't do the same now that he has more talent. So just really have liked this guy more and more as the week gone on, and I'm just really happy for him that he's going to have some talent to work with. But that brings us to – I don't mean this to sound condescending or to, you know, normally put down our Twitter followers, but honestly, I will say that we got the best Twitter questions ever this week, and kind of excited about throwing them at you. I'll let you answer some of them first, because obviously I've looked at them and I just want to ambush you. But
all right.
So the Hornets.
Yes. No, sorry. Go ahead.
I guess I'll start off with an easy one for you. We'll do an over-under on Anthony Davis's stat line. So I'll just give you the categories. You tell me, first instinct, you're going over or under Davis's rookie stat line.
Okay.
15 points a game.
Under.
10 rebounds a game.
Over.
Wow. 3 blocks a game.
Could I push?
Exactly 3. He's going to finish the season with 246 blocks.
Exactly. there's no variation on that.
45% from the field.
Under. Wait, no, I'm going over. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. 65% free throw?
I don't know what his free throw stroke is.
It was 71 in college.
I'll go over.
And 100 dunks.
I'm going to go over.
Okay. Yeah. So do you see him winning Rookie of the Year?
That's a really hard thing for me to determine. I mean, I really don't know what the other guys – it's so based on points. And as you heard by my response, I expect him to do like a 13 and 11 kind of thing maybe. So I would have a really hard time – saying whether he's going to win Rookie of the Year certainly or not. Because there could be somebody who lights up the league. Like, say, Lillard is everything he's cracked up to be. He could score a lot if he's on a crappy team.
Yeah, he could have a Mike Jones. Mike Jones?
Right. Or Bradley Beal, if he's as awesome as you think he is and he ends up, you know, in Charlotte, he could easily be their go-to guy and put up 20 points a game.
Yeah, no, I mean, Mike James averaged, what, 20.2 points a game for the Raptors that one year?
Right.
And we saw what he was on a real team.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say yes, I think he's going to win Rookie of the Year, because I think it's more likely that 13-11 would win you than one of those guys is going to blow up and put in 20 a game. And I think that's what it would take to unseat him. But I'm not certain of it.
What about if the Hornets make the playoffs? Would that, regardless of stats, would...
He would make Rookie of the Year without any question.
Okay.
One thing I don't see him doing, and I've seen some people already say that, I don't see him as an all-star in this first year. It's so hard to become an all-star in your first year. Last guy who did it, I think, was other than Blake Griffin, was Tim Duncan. And, I mean, it's just, it is a really, really, Blake Griffin had all that hype behind him.
Well, he had the hype. It was actually technically his second year. He was a little older. And same with Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan came out as a senior. If you look at Anthony Davis's freshman years and Tim Duncan's freshman year, Anthony Davis blows him out of the water too. In fact, actually, I went back and I looked at every elite big man in the last 35 years, and there's only one guy. I hope you're not looking at the Twitter feed, because I want to see you try to guess this. One guy in the last 35 years with comparable numbers to Anthony Davis in his freshman year. Can you name him?
I would have to guess it's Shaq.
No, Ralph Sampson.
I should have known that, but that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, who was?
Yeah, that's one thing I'm really terrified of. Ralph Sampson was supposed to be the man coming out of college. And he was skinny as could be.
Yeah, but he was 7'4".
That's true.
I mean, we're talking about Andre the Giant, Princess Bride giantism here.
Really? So Shaq wasn't even comparable?
No, I mean, not all around when you look at, you know, the defensive impact as well, but it's really freaky. If you get a chance, Google, I think it was 1979-80 Ralph Sampson stats and Anthony Davis's. I mean, Anthony Davis was a little better in points per game and field goal percentage, but, you know, you couldn't see a difference anywhere else. I mean, blocks per game, all of it was eerily similar. So, and Ralph Sampson, yeah, even though had some injuries, he was one of the greatest college players of all time, and, you know, obviously had a good start to his NBA career before injuries. But
wow, that is freak. 29 minutes, 14.9 points, 11.2 rebounds, 1.1 assists, 54% field goal, and 70% from free throw.
Yeah, and how many blocks a game?
It doesn't say here.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
That's kind of lame.
I think it was 4.7. I think that's the same as, it's really freaky with how close they were. So that's the only guy. That's how good of a prospect we're talking about with Anthony Davis. But I agree. I think a guard that gets on the right bad team could have a Tyreke Evans type of empty stats year and wrestle that away. But the Hornets make the playoffs, which Skip Bayless said that they will. I love Skip Bayless only because it shows how ridiculous fans are. When Skip Bayless says something they disagree with, he's the biggest idiot in the world. But when they say something that's good for their team, all of a sudden he's the most credible guy. I just love it.
Right. No, Skip drives me nuts.
All right, so this comes from...
But the Hornets are making the playoffs, damn it. They're contenders this year.
Utah contender and they made the play. I could definitely see the Hornets being better than last year's Utah team. But this one comes from Nick Llewellyn. The Hornets. This is again if Eric Gordon comes back, which Monty and Dell have said time and time again that all they know is their conversations they've had with Eric. And they believe he's coming back. Eric Gordon was there today to watch the workouts. So assuming Eric Gordon and Anthony Davis come back, Nick brings up, look, you look at the four teams still in the playoffs right now. They're all kind of built around this big three model. Is that the way the Hornets should go? And basically, if so, what type of player do you add to those two that would make a big three that would contend for the next 5 to 10 years?
So if I was looking, other than defense, which has to be there, I mean, it's got to be, they've got to have a shooter.
So So give me a guy in his.
No, I'm not saying like, well, I mean, Peja may be in his prime.
Okay.
But so it's, so Anthony Davis is your defensive anchor, your guy who can clean up the garbage around the basket and you can run a pick and roll with. Eric Gordon is the ball handler on the pick and roll. He is the wrecking ball. He's the one who can get you the points off of free throws when you need him to. He can go into the teeth of the defense. But you got to have a guy who can receive the ball on the kickouts, run a pick and pop kind of thing, and also be a threat to drive at the same time. You can't just have him. He can't be the one who sits in the corner and just waits. Can't be Bellinelli. I think that's necessary. I think you got to have somebody who's a threat. You have to respect him in the 3-point line, but he can make something off the dribble if you need him to.
So let me ask you this on top of that question. So what if you're the GM and you're saying, I'm going after this big three model, I got my two, what would be the most likely way you see of adding a third? A, the 10th pick in this year's draft. B, the draft next year, maybe the Hornets struggle one more year and get into the lottery. C, collecting a bunch of slightly above average assets to turn into the third guy, or D, the free agent market. Most likely way to get that third guy of the big three.
Free agent market. Actually, none of those. Trade. And I don't mean like.
Okay.
I don't actually believe. I mean, we've seen what's happened in Houston when they gathered a bunch of good, not great players. They haven't been able to get someone to take those guys off their hands for a high caliber player.
So how are you going to get in a trade your third guy?
You have to take a solid guy of your own and move him with a draft pick.
Okay.
And probably for a guy who has some mental issues of some sort. and Monty Williams has to make him, you know, like Steven Jackson kind of thing. Maybe not that old.
Or much better. But, yeah, okay. So I'm hearing you're saying, like, if you could strike gold with like Memphis did with Zach Randolph.
Yeah, something like that. It's very difficult to get a competent perimeter player that is going to be an impactful perimeter player. So, I mean, could they trade for Andre Iguodala? I'm not saying he's the shooter. Maybe that would help, though. That would be enough. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, out of all the big three, though, wouldn't Iguodala be the worst player of all the other teams? I mean, I think you need a player better. If you're talking about the big three model, that usually means all three of those guys are multi-time all-stars and, you know, not just fringe all-star guys.
Right.
So you're saying, though, that the Hornets' most likely chance to get that guy isn't a trade in the future. So does that mean going back to the 10th pick that you'd be more likely to just get a guy that you know is going to be solid and that you know that you know you're getting with? So when you do get the third guy in the big three, you have essentially a solid fourth starter with him.
I am absolutely on the path for a solid player at three. I mean, the only one I've mentioned before is Perry Jones, who isn't like that. I mean, Henson, I think, is a solid pick. Solinger, I think, is a solid pick. So, Marshall is a solid pick.
All right.
Rivers is a terrible pick.
You're so wrong. But I just hope that when we do our 10-pick tournament that before you cast your vote, you at least read the arguments. And I hope everybody does that, not just go in with a preconceived idea. I still don't understand. I mean, maybe Austin Rivers did the wrong thing and he should have changed his last name and went to a small school so he would have been a fun, trendy pick. I just feel like everybody wants to hate on him because, you know, he has this pedigree. And because, I mean, this was a guy that up until Anthony Davis' miraculous growth spurt was the consensus number one player in his class for years and was the one that, you know, everybody was fighting over. But now he didn't have a 30-point per game freshman season, which, you know, doesn't I'm not going to get into it. I'll just let my
I successfully baited you there.
All right, so this one comes from at Ryan in the hot tub. This might be you. Ryan in the hot tub on Twitter.
That's how I roll, man.
Basically, and this is something I'm interested in, the Hornets are talking about bringing in Evan Fournier. It looks like he's been shut down because of injury, but he'll still be in this draft. But he basically asked, do you see the Hornets trying to get a third pick if there was some international prospect that they could just kind of stash? I guess I'll split that into two. You know, do you think if the Hornets do get a third first-round pick in the draft, this is the likely way that they go? And if not, do you really think they could bring three rookies onto this roster next year?
I mean, you could absolutely bring on three rookies on the roster. I don't particularly think this team would want to do that, though. So, I mean, I have a feeling that they're going to look at some of the guys. So with Tom Benson buying the team, they do have one opportunity here that they have not had in the past few years, which is there are always picks for sale at the end of the first round or at the beginning of the second round. And there are always ones available. So they have not been able to avail themselves of that because the NBA is not going to buy a pick for them, and neither was George Shen. So at least they can start looking at those players. And, you know, Fournier is one of those guys who's right there at the edge of the bubble. They're not sure if he's going to be first round or he's second round. And, you know, Dell's been focused on overseas scouting. So he might really like this guy, and if he can get him, like, at the 31st pick and stash him over there, it makes some sense that he would do that.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see them doing that. I would love for them to revisit one of your old ideas of going after a guy like Mirotic, you know, and maybe giving up some kind of asset or, you know, I don't know what they would have to do with Chicago to do that. I love the idea of maybe Nick Kalathis, who's over in Greece. But, yeah, I mean, San Antonio still has guys over there. You know, they bring over a Tiago Splitter, it seems like, anytime they want. They still have two very good prospects over in Europe. Obviously, Demps comes from that model. So I could see that being done. Here's another. Okay, so you brought up Benson, so I'm going to bring up this one. This was, to me, the most interesting question from at Oceanbeck. Says basically, how much did the value of the Hornets increase with them getting the first pick? And I'll ask it to you like this: Tom Benson before the lottery paid $338. Let's say that was the market value, $338 for this franchise. What would this franchise sell for today? Now that the Hornets know they're getting the first pick,
$400 million. I don't know. Am I an economist? Sorry.
Well, I mean, you know, people often said LeBron James was worth $100 million to the
Cavs. So, yeah, that's why I threw $400 million. And actually, I mean, it's a legitimate question. I'm not mocking him. The New York Knicks, just because they now have several stars and Jeremy Lin, the Forbes rating for them, they increased the value of their franchise, their estimated value, by $150 million over last year. $150 million because they have Jeremy Lin, Carmelo Anthony, and Amari Stoudemire. So, who knows? Anthony Davis might be worth $100 million. I don't know.
Yeah. Not.
I mean, honestly, if I was buying the Hornets and I was a big mogul, I'm still only paying $338 million for it. I'm not going to raise my price because how much competition did they have for that? I guess they had a few people out there, but it clearly wasn't. I don't know. I don't know if I would pay more for it.
No, I just think it's interesting, and to me that matters because, you know, if Benson is already has a commodity that's worth $50 million more than when he bought, which he technically hasn't even bought it yet.
Right.
You know, I think he'd be a little bit more likely to cut a $3 million check, or even when we talked about amnestying Okafor. How much easier is it to cut that check now if you've got Anthony Davis just bringing in money? And this is a guy that, you know, he's a good player. He has a great personality. Like, he's going to be a very, very marketable player. There's guys who come into the league, you know, Kevin Durant doesn't have much of a personality, fabulous player. You know, Anthony Davis is going to be a very marketable player, and he's definitely going to give this franchise a face for the foreseeable future. So I just thought that was an interesting question to consider, because it could affect, you know, on the court, you know, basketball operations.
So you brought him up. I'm going to ambush you with this question. You've said over and over again, you still feel that the Hornets are probably 3 years at least from contention. Okafor has 2 years left on his contract. Do you see any reason to amnesty him, or just let him, should he play out his contract?
I mean, if...
I mean, and I mean, if you amnesty him,
yeah,
you got to replace him somehow.
Right. If Deron Williams comes to, or Darren, whatever, if he comes to me and says...
Oh, whoa. Did you just mispronounce the player's name?
I called him Darren Deron. I had Bewitched on the mind. But if Deron Williams comes to us and says, all this stuff I hear about this Anthony Davis guy, you know, is the tops, man, then, yeah, I amnesty him in a second. If I could get a young star veteran, I'm not talking about Goran Dragic. I'm not talking about a possible good player that I've seen flashes of in JaVale McGee. If I could get a young, and by young, I'm thinking 25 or under, potential star by amnestying Okafor, yeah, I'd do it. But, I'm not going to do it to bring in Kevin Garnett or Duncan for a year, or, you know, go for a title or a fifth seed this year. So I guess it really depends on what's presented to me. I mean, again, if I could get Rajon Rondo, but the Celtics don't want to take any salary back in the trade. They just want, you know, maybe our pick and whatever else. If I could get Rondo, but to make that work salary cap wise and to re-sign Gordon, I've got to amnesty Okafor. Of course, in any of those situations, I do it. I just don't see those situations being very realistic. So I probably end up keeping Okafor for a year. But if I could get an under 25, 26 guy who's a viable star, and to do that, I have to amnesty Okafor. Of course I do.
So let's play the game. Andre Iguodala.
No.
Brandon Jennings.
Well, I mean, that's not fair, because he's only worth, I mean, his contract's what, $2.5 million?
So you have the we are at the cap because of other signings we've made this year. But they come to us and say, we want to trade you Brandon Jennings. If you have the room to take him and we don't want anything back, or if we take your next year's pick.
I would probably explore trading Ariza under that situation, but yeah, I guess I don't know how we would have gotten to the cap, but yeah, I guess I would.
Brandon Jennings is good enough for that?
Only because he's a $2.5 million player. I mean, I'm not paying Brandon Jennings big money.
Oh, you're going to have to pretty soon though.
Yeah, no, that's a possibility, but I got him on the cheap for at least 1 year, maybe two.
Rudy Gay?
No.
Okay.
It would be a really small list of guys. Like, I think those guys are just outside of the big three.
Tyreek Evans, knowing that you have to have a contract in his hand very soon for no less than $9.5 million a year.
No, thank you.
Okay. You think Tyreek Evans is that bad now? So let's just say flat up, you're not even, if you just had the opportunity right now to get Tyreek Evans, knowing that when his contract is up next year, is it?
Well, all those guys will be restricted. All those guys from that class, except for Rubio, because he didn't come over for the first 2 years, but all those guys will be restricted next year.
So you don't think Tyreek Evans is going to get a $9 or $10 million a year?
Oh, he might get it, but he wouldn't get the mid-level from me.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
That guy will never be on a winning team in his life. Unless he goes to Italy and plays for some team in Italy.
I would honestly love to have him on our team as a small forward.
All right. Well, I'll let Del know whenever we get him on the podcast. So that was, and then I guess the last one we'll kind of talk about is the point guard situation, and that'll let me kind of give my argument for Marshall long term. So the comments that we kind of got from Dell and Monty, if you listen to both of them this week, is that Monty was very he talked a lot about how he likes Jared Jack, but Jared Jack only has 1 year left on his contract, and that if they're thinking about bringing in a point guard, it would kind of be as a guy to learn from Jack. Conversely, Demps also talked very high about Vasquez, but he made it a point to say that a lot of teams around the league call and ask about Vasquez. Of course, me being a lover of Kendall Marshall, I'm thinking, all right, well, that's great. If Marshall's there at 10, the Hornets could grab him, be groomed under Jack for a year, and Dell will have plenty of opportunities to move Vasquez. Is that a scenario that you would like, or would you rather the Hornets' point guard position play out a different way?
So you think Jack with Marshall and move Vasquez?
I mean, that Demps' exact quote was that he gets a lot of calls about Vasquez.
If, well, depending on what we could get for Vasquez.
I mean, you got to pick that brings you Evan Fournier.
But I'll say this flat out. I would rather have Vasquez and Kendall Marshall next year than Jack and Kendall Marshall next year.
Why is that?
I'm kind of on the anti-Jack bandwagon now.
But again, next year we're not trying to win a title. We're trying to get these young guys ready to win. What is Vasquez going to teach Marshall, or who's going to be the leader of that team?
I think they would push each other.
Okay.
I know you like the idea of veterans coming in and teaching guys the ropes. I actually prefer to have a couple guys fighting for the same position.
Where has that worked?
I believe it worked in San Antonio because Tony Parker could not hold down the starting point guard position for 3 years.
Yeah, who was the other young guy that was pushing him?
It wasn't a young guy, but it was a guy who was not the veteran who's supposed to teach him the ropes.
I've never seen this model that you're talking about where you have eight or nine young, hungry guys who are all fighting for starters' roles. I've never seen it. I've seen the same model work. You have the young guys, you have the professional veterans who provide the leadership, who kind of pass the torch. So I just don't see Vasquez is already talking about wanting to be the starter of the future. Obviously, if they draft Marshall at 10, he knows that's not going to happen. The writing's on the wall.
Why?
I just don't get it.
I want those two guys competing. I want them to compete for a year or two. And then may the best man win, because I have no idea if Marshall's going to pan out.
Ugh.
I know Vasquez can actually be serviceable for most of a game, and, Kendall Marshall can push him, or Lillard can push him. And if, clearly one of those two guys is winning, then Vasquez can be moved. But you've also established that Vasquez can be one of your starting point guards.
For a 20-win team. I'm not as optimistic as you.
So you want Jared Jack and Kendall Marshall, and you want to send Vasquez off for Kevin Fournier's pick?
Yeah, for Evan Fournier, yeah, sure.
Is it Evan? Sorry.
Yeah.
Evan.
Oh, it's all right. Kevin, Evan, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, or something along those lines. I can't possibly imagine, Vasquez, who really only had his first season where he had legitimate time. We saw, a maddeningly frustrating season. So now Monty's gotta go in with essentially 1 year of NBA experience between his two point guards who are trying to make the game, easier. I hate that formula. I hate it. I know we could talk about statistics, advanced, whatever. I don't see the Hornets having any chance of winning a title next year, so I don't care about that. I just think as far as, setting up that veteran and then rookie relationship and the transition that is bound to take place. I don't see any scenario in which the Hornets draft a point guard at 10 and then Vasquez beats that guy out. And if that's the case, we would have just wasted a pick and just a bad scenario.
So Rajon Rondo, before the season and before the playoffs, we talked a lot about scenarios where maybe he ended up as a Hornet. After the way he's played in these playoffs, I don't see a prayer of that ever happening now. I mean, if Boston trades him, they're idiots.
Right. And my scenario, I remember in my Rondo scenarios, I gave up a huge amount for him, and people on the site just absolutely blasted me. No, we could get him for 10 Jack and Okafor. That's what my voice of people on the site who disagree with me sounds like. No, we can get him. I was giving up the 5th pick, the 10th pick. Basically, right. You know, I was giving up a bushel, and I still didn't think Boston would take. But yeah, now that the Hornets obviously aren't giving up that first pick, to me, it's insulting at this point, because who has more value, Rondo right now or Chris Paul last summer, when, you know, he only had 1 year on his deal, you were going to have to pay him a ton? Rondo's on a fairly decent deal, and he's not that much worse of a player than Paul. So for people thinking 10 and Jarrett Jack, that's just insulting.
Right. So where I'm going with this, though, what would be your best scenario, realistic scenario, knowing Rondo's off the table for point guard for next year?
Okay, well, again, you got to remember the two guys I'm in love with are Marshall and Rivers. So I guess, like I said, I could stomach Sullinger. So under this scenario, the Hornets would have taken Sullinger. I don't sign anybody to long-term deals. I pretty much go with the roster I have. I keep the amnesty card in my back pocket, and I seriously see if the Chris Paul scenario has any possibility. And then from there, I keep waiting, and if it takes another year or two for me to add my big piece, but to these people saying give $8 million or $10 million to Goran Dragic, or even to tie down $7 million a year in Kyle Lowry and just, you know, kill possible flexibility for next summer with a pretty nice, that's a pretty nice free agent class next summer. Mm-hmm. I just don't get it. So my thing is, if the Hornets don't get Marshall or Rivers, I just say keep the guys you got, or, you know, if you move one of them, just bring in another guy on a one-year deal. But to me, I just don't see the point in minorly upgrading the point guard position to a Goran Dragic or somebody like that and essentially killing flexibility for the years where you could make a huge splash.
Hmm.
How about you? I mean, do you have something in mind?
As long as it wasn't a complete salary dump, I would go after Kyle Lowry. I think Lowry would fit nicely on this team. And I would, you know, I'd throw the 10th pick for Kyle Lowry out there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you'd have to be giving away a little bit of salary, like 10th pick and Jack or something like that.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, I'm going to be paying, about $9 million more over the next 2 years for Lowry than Kendall Marshall. And again, I don't plan on contending over the next 2 years.
And I think Kyle Lowry's better. I don't... See, again, Kendall Marshall, I'm not sure what's going to happen with him. I know what I'm going to get with Kyle.
See, I'm so sick of this. Like, you don't know what's going to – that's always the excuse people go back on rookie. I mean, I could find you articles on people saying Kevin Durant is too skinny. And I believe that if you have an evaluation, you have to believe in that evaluation. And to me, I always talk about getting some – who has elite attributes, because those guys rarely fail if they do something elite. So in the history of Draft Express, they've been around since 2001, Kendall Marshall has the highest assists per 20 minutes adjusted in the history of their database, the highest ever. He also has the number one all-time pure point ratio ever. And this is kind of disappointing, but he's has the third highest assist to turnover ratio in the history of since Draft Express has been around since 2001. So over the past 11 years, like how I mean, what do they say that you know the past is the best indicator of future success? You could always use that argument. You don't know what you're going to get for a rookie, but how can you say that a guy who has been the absolute best to come along in the last 11 years in two categories that are important, and you know the third best in another very, very important category, how can you possibly convince me that he's going to fail?
Because if he's terrible at shooting and at defense, he's not playing.
Oh, okay. So the lazy argument that everybody makes about Marshall can't score. Well, see, to me...
No. I didn't say that. What? But if you shoot a... If you have a true shooting percentage below 50% in college, you think you're going to get better in the NBA?
I think Kendall Marshall at UNC... In until games matter, basically the way I see Kendall Marshall when I watch him, and again, I'm not late to the party. I was the first one at the party with a bag of Doritos and my own dip. I was on this guy from our first podcast telling you that in that UK-UNC game, he was the most impressive game to me. So I'm not just coming along, but to me, the way that I would explain Kendall Marshall to Hornets fans who pretend that they watched college basketball this year but really didn't, is think of Kendall Marshall throughout the whole game the way that Chris Paul plays in the first half of games. That's how Kendall Marshall plays because he has enough talent to do that. But when Kendall Marshall needed to turn it on this year in the last six games that he played in, so we're talking about the Duke finale, we're talking about the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament, he averaged 15 points a game, shot 58% from the field and 50% from three, and oh, by the way, he still averaged over 10 assists a game. And we have that story that, you know, Brian came on and told us about how NC State called him one-dimensional, went out there, scored 22 points on eight shots, 4 of 5 from three, and just said after, oh, I'm one-dimensional, huh, after the game? Not to mention he had 13 assists and 0 turnovers in that game. Like, it's just, I know he's not fun to watch on YouTube and all your highlights or whatever, but... It's just, it's getting to the point of ridiculousness now where people are just so lazy when evaluating this guy. And I don't know. I really, from what it sounds like from some of Monty's comments, he might not be the, you know, the guy that they're looking at if they're looking for scores. But what I'll remind people is a guy who averages 10 points and 10 assists is getting you just as many points as the guy who's, you know, throwing up 22 points and 4 assists. And maybe more, because his assist might be leading to three-pointers or whatever. So Marshall is going to contribute to the Hornets being a much better offensive team. I don't know. I'm throwing a ceiling of John Stockton out there and a floor of Andre Miller.
Okay, we'll see.
And you know what? On Draft Express, what's funny is his ceiling is Andre Miller and his floor is Jose Calderon. Sound familiar as guys we've talked about being Hornets point guards?
Right. Yeah, Okafor for Calderon. Make it happen.
I'm just putting it out there now. You know, I won't hulk up if people talk about Kendall Marshall as being a bad defender. That's a fine, legitimate argument. When people start saying he can't score, it's just lazy. That's the same argument that all of us Hornets fans know are false about Chris Paul in the first half. He chooses not to. But anyway.
Yeah. Ignore all 36 games in favor of the 6 where he could shoot well.
Okay. All right. You just keep hating.
I will. I'm a Kendall Marshall hater.
Well, I'm a Damian Lillard hater, so.
Hope that's fine. I'm not.
Out and the Hornets will have, I don't know, Thomas Robinson fall to him at 10.
Right. If that happens, I'll eat my hat.
Eat it.
It'd be cool. It'd be cool, though.
Yeah. All right, so that's about all I got from Twitter, press conferences, anything else, any thoughts on the week that was, the workouts, things that you want to see moving forward? I guess, do you care at all about this combine and how guys measure out? Will anything knock any of these guys off your list, or – ascend guys up, or does it really not matter to you at all?
It doesn't matter to me. I mean, I'll, don't get me wrong. I will go pore over the numbers. But, I mean, it doesn't matter that much to me. I mean, I guess if Jared Solinger showed up and he measured 6'3", then, yes, it would probably matter to me because then he becomes Carl Landry.
Well, in all seriousness, what's the shortest he can measure that takes him? I guess what's the tallest he can measure that would still be too short that would take him off your list? What's the
if he is under 6'6", I would be worried.
So if he's 6'6" and a half in shoes, you still are fine with taking him?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. And then is there any – if he measures 6'10", does he shoot up and you're definitely on the Solinger train?
No.
All right.
No, I mean, it, basically what ends up happening is once they get below a certain point, they become extremely liable to be destroyed defensively.
To be destroyed.
Right. I mean, like, because there are always those short guys who do well. I mean, like – you remember Corliss Williamson was one of these kind of guys. He would come in and he would score really well. Carl Landry is the same mold. There's always those guys around who are just powerful. They're built to score around the basket, and they do. But they get scored on just as much. And so they're good in certain situations and not good in others. And, I mean, if Jared Solinger ends up being too short, I would rather go for somebody who, you know, maybe their college production isn't quite as good, but you know they're not going to be such a liability defensively.
Yeah.
Especially with Solinger, because, I mean, if it was Henson who measured that short, I don't know if I would care as much because he gets by because he's so – his arms are like 72 feet long. So.
Yeah, and that's measured. They are going to measure that this week, and I think it will come out.
So, I mean, I always thought it was really – Elton Brand was always a really good and I mean, Elton Brand for like the first 5 years of his career averaged like two and a half blocks a game. And everyone is always like, well, he's undersized power forward. But if you go look at the database, yeah, he's short, but his standing reach was like the standing reach of a, like a 7'2" guy. And it's because apparently his neck was extremely short and his arms were freakishly long.
Okay. All right, so you're going to be looking at wingspan.
I'll pour all over wingspan and length, and it probably won't mean a thing in the end because at this point most people know how tall people actually are.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm. I guess the only thing I'm doing, I'm holding my breath and hoping that Damian Lillard doesn't register like a 46-inch vert. So I got to hear about that. other than that, yeah, I agree. I don't. I'm not focused on as much, but it's an exciting time. And look at all this. And I don't think we even really talked about Anthony Davis at all, did we?
No, not much at least.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. And we'll be back in about a week.
Hey guys, it's Mike. As you know, I adopted my pup Rocky from a local rescue. Now, when people asked me what kind of dog Rocky was, I was always stumped. I used an Embark dog DNA test to decode my most puzzling questions about Rocky. You can also learn about your dog's inner secrets with Embark, the highest rated dog DNA test. Unlock over 350 breeds and screen for over 200 genetic health risks. Save $50 on a breed and health kit with promo code KIT at EmbarkVet.com. Again, that's promo code KIT.